Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, your journey, our passion. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.
This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 123 for October 20th, 2011. Scion swings for the fences. Watch Out of Line After Hours live at outoflinedetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Out of Line After Hours in the iTunes Store. Well, thanks for joining us again, folks, for another episode of Out of Line After Hours. And with me, as always, the auto extremist, Peter DeLorenzo.
Buongiorno, Gianni.
Good to have you here, Peter.
Great to be here. We won't discuss our dinner last night.
No, we will not discuss that tonight. We don't even have to get into that.
Yeah.
But let's welcome Michelle Krebs from Edmunds.com, who's here with us
Thanks
tonight, too.
Thanks for having me.
It's good
My
to have
first.
You. Your first Out of Line After Hours, even as many times as you've been on the TV program.
Right. This is a different animal.
Well, yeah. Now you're part of the in crowd. So.
Yeah. Cool kids.
That's right. And then later on in the show, we'll have Jack Hollis from Scion joining us as well. But, Peter, I've been dying to talk to you about this IndyCar race last week in Las Vegas where Dan Weldon was killed because, I mean, not only is it a tragedy, now I've been meaning to ask you, should they have ever even run that race? Should they have gone to that track?
Well, you know, let's back up a little bit in that NASCAR runs these restrictor plate races, which are just a train wreck, literally.
And they know there will be a train wreck at some point in the race, what they call the big one.
Especially at Talladega. And, you know, since Dale Earnhardt was killed, they've done a tremendous amount to make the stock car safe. But still, I mean, it's carnage on those high banks. The problem is IndyCars cannot run that way. They don't. When they run in packs that way, I mean, they've avoided disaster many times in the last 7-8 years in IndyCar on those types of speedways. And what we're talking about are 1.5 mile ovals with high banks. And the IndyCars will run in packs. Well, you cannot run in packs in IndyCars. As good as those guys and girls are, it's inevitable that someone will make just the slightest mistake. And you touch wheels in an open wheel car, there's going to be a serious incident. And, you know, it was tragic. Dan Weldon, it was a great guy, but I don't think people realize how close they were to losing more than one driver in that race.
Is that right?
Yeah. Will Power went up in the air and was fortunate to hit the wall and not get up in the catch fencing, and he hit with the side and the bottom of his car. If he had hit the catch fencing like Weldon did, which was cockpit first, who knows? Should they have run there? They might not be able to run in those types of high-banked 1.5 mile ovals again. I mean, they were running 225 mile-per-hour laps, which are Indianapolis 500 speeds. But Indy, as you know, is a flat, huge oval. Cars can separate themselves. When you run in a pack like that, it's
in a bowl, essentially.
Yeah, it's very dangerous. And, you know, I think the reaction has gone way too far. Well, Jimmy Johnson even corrected himself. He at first said, oh, those guys shouldn't run on ovals. What he meant was they shouldn't run on those particular kinds of ovals.
Yeah, I think he was actually saying they should only run on road courses.
Well, yeah, but he backed Changed up and he that. Called Mario and he called AJ, he called a bunch of guys and did a mea culpa. And they understood what he meant, but it's unfortunate. It opens up a lot of scrutiny to the sport. I feel terrible for Randy Bernard because he's been doing a tremendous job, and it's just a terrible thing to have happen for all concerned, especially for the Weldon family. I mean, he's 33 years old, young guy, very good guy, well-liked. And, you know, unfortunately, like I wrote in my column, it's the cruelest sport. At any given moment, and people sort of forget about it. We haven't had a major superstar driver lose his life since Dale Earnhardt. We've had other people killed, but this is a two-time Indy winner. And people forget, you know, when they go out to practice, they go out to qualify, they go out to race, they go out to test, there's a real good chance they don't come back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people forget about that. So when it happens, it's just like, oh, boy. And, you know, I've been around, unfortunately, too long, and I've seen it too many times, as you have. Mm-hmm. I guess if I was configuring the schedule, they would have to convince me that the 2012 car, which is all new, could separate itself from each other. So they do not run
in packs. But don't you think IndyCar wanted them running in packs? It is really exciting to watch. But the reason it's exciting is you just know how dangerous it is.
Well, nobody wants anyone to get hurt. I've questioned them running at Texas. I mean, Texas is scary in a Sprint Cup car, and they've run in packs at Texas, and they've had some pretty significant wrecks, but nothing like this. And I just said, man, you know, I hate to see it, and I hate to see it come to the fore in this manner where someone loses his life. But I think they're going to have to reevaluate it. I think the 1.5 mile high bank ovals are going to be off limits for IndyCars for a while.
I would agree totally.
They're just playing roulette.
Is IndyCar liable for a lawsuit in this?
I don't think so. No, I really don't.
And what do you do to the cars? I mean,
The 2012 car is significantly different. Mm-hmm. The oval car, when you look at the current IndyCar, it's like Formula One. There's huge gaps between the wheels. Mm-hmm. You know, the new IndyCar has actually the bodywork is flush towards the back of the car.
So they can't lock wheels.
Well, side to side is different, but you know, you still have the back tire exposed. Now, when you saw in this horrific wreck at Las Vegas, three cars went over the backs of cars and launched themselves. Mm-hmm. One was Dan Weldon, one was Will Power, Jay Hildebrand, and maybe there was a fourth. But I mean, it was terrible. But I got to say, they were very lucky that there was not multiple fatalities in that wreck.
Wow.
Because you have that kind of wreck in NASCAR and you hold your breath.
Sure you do, right.
You have a wreck like that in IndyCar and it was just like, oh my God. It was the worst open wheel multi-car wreck in racing history.
I agree.
Absolutely the worst.
I've been a racing fan since I was 12 years old. I've never seen anything like this.
There's been some horrific individual crashes. I mean, we can all remember, if you're a racing fan, I mean, Swede Savage at Indy in 1973 was just, you know, horrific. Of course, the great Gilles Villeneuve lost his life in Belgium. I mean, he came out of his body came out of the car. I mean, you know, but that was the worst multi-car open wheel wreck in racing history.
Mm-hmm. It was amazing when they came around after the accident. It looked like a battlefield. I'd never seen anything like it before.
Well, who said, I don't know which driver said it looked like the Terminator set.
Yeah, I think that might have been Paul Tracy said it looked like Terminator.
It was terrible. Just a dark day for racing.
Yeah.
But I think the overreaction, I got to tell you, when I turn on the Today Show and they're talking about racing, they need to shut up.
They do, because they don't know what they're talking about.
They have no idea.
Right.
And it's just like, you know what, Matt? You can't cover this. You don't know what you're talking about. Just don't cover it. Just say it was tragic and move on. Don't try to analyze it, dissect it, or anything, because you look like a fool.
Yep. I know there's a lot of people out there with opinions who don't know what motor racing's about at all and never follow it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's change gears here. And Michelle, let's get you in on this. What do you make of the UAW contracts? because, you know, there was this uncertainty, right, would the Ford, right, one be approved?
Right.
And then,
right,
as more and more locals came in, it passed overwhelmingly.
Right, right. Well, for the union side, I think it was as good as they could do. Not fabulous for them, but, you know, these are different times. It looks to me like for Ford, it keeps their costs in line. This isn't going to cost them a whole lot of money. And I'm always interested in where the plant, you know, products are going and which plants.
Well, we learn a lot out of these contracts,
yes,
don't we?
We never used to do that. We had to wait.
They spill their guts of what,
right,
products they're putting,
right,
in which plants. Now, they don't always name them.
No, but we know. Right. Okay. Although they did name a lot of them today.
They did.
Ford did a call today, and, you know, we know that the spillover for the Fusion is next generation is going into Flat Rock and the Mustang.
Now, are sales enough? Are they still going to build them in Mexico?
Yes, that's my understanding. So,
what do you mean spillover?
Well,
you know,
next generation Fusion,
right,
should
next
be
generation will be
a substantially
better seller.
Yeah,
right,
better,
right,
seller.
Which,
yeah,
is, you know, they're building on a strong base. And then we know that the Mustang's going to stay there, and then we've got a next generation Mustang coming. Mm-hmm. I think Mexico's interesting, too, because, you know, my sense is there's a little trepidation about all of the manufacturing that's in Mexico these days and how, you know, the situation is so volatile there with the drug wars. And one of the things that we saw from Ford is they're moving commercial trucks out of Mexico to Avon Lake in Ohio.
Oh, interesting.
So,
and Avon Lake is where they make the big Econoline van,
correct,
right now.
Correct. And then they're going to make the Transit van.
The Euro Transit, which is
in,
pretty cool.
Kansas City, where they make the Escape.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of, that's been the most interesting thing of these negotiations to me, is how much they're laying out in terms of future product plans.
Funny that you mentioned that about Mexico, because I know in the supplier community, this is a,
yes,
concern right now.
Yes.
Security of their people and just being able to move goods in and out of the country.
Well, right. And how do you attract people to take on those jobs when it's so volatile?
You pay them more.
Well, there's that.
You give them hazard pay or whatever it takes. There are people who will do that.
I guess there are.
You know, I always find it amusing when we in Detroit say, oh, you know, it's really dangerous down there.
Well, it is.
So, you know, do you really think this is a victory for the UAW, though, in the sense that, I mean, come on, the contract
really,
should have been signed a month ago?
No, I don't think it's necessarily a huge victory either, but it's all they could do.
Yeah, I don't think it's a victory really for anybody. I mean, this business is still a long way from being out of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was, John and I particularly get irked with all the histrionics that the UAW pulls. It's like, really, at this point, with all that's transpired?
We've seen that on the company side, too.
Yeah,
there's,
yeah,
been lots of theater
but
during
that's
these.
The best you guys can do, really? Because the deal they came to was the deal that they were going to come to last summer.
That's right.
If they just quit all the stuff and just say, yeah, well, you know, this is all we can do.
And I don't see them getting any step closer to doing any of the transplants, organizing them.
I don't see that either.
That isn't happening.
No.
And, you know, you say, Peter, that the industry's not doing that good, and you're right on a historical standpoint. But I saw that the chief economist at GM and Ford said sales will get better next year. What are you guys at Edmunds saying?
Well, we're figuring that out. We think that it'll be somewhat better. We're thinking maybe low 13s.
Yeah, I think they're saying like 12.5 to 13.5.
Right. We expect this year to come in at 12.7. That's where
I'm just saying that the business, of course, has stabilized,
mm-hmm,
from 2008 and 2009, but, you know, we're a long way from the old days. I don't think we'll ever see the old days again. I mean, I think we might.
I do.
Well,
think
I know
we
might. We're, you know, I know you're big on like 15,000 or whatever, and that's
15 million.
Yeah, 15 million. But that, you know, when that happens, that's gravy. But right now, there's a lot of ifs, ands, or buts going on.
I agree totally.
I'd love to see 15 million.
And the other thing that everybody's looking at pent up demand, and we've talked about this a lot in our offices, of, you know, cars are over 10 years old, and there's all this pent up demand. People are going to have to buy.
There's a lot of pent-up demand, but
it's only trickling out a little bit at a time. So.
Yeah, but I mean, I still take it as a very good sign because, look, the automotive industry right now is one of the few bright spots in the economy. You know, the automakers here are making money, the suppliers are making money, the dealers are making money. It's one of the few bright spots. And I think it'll continue to climb. And I know I was in the barber shop the other day, and this was a topic of conversation. I try to stay out of it, you know, but one guy goes, oh, the only reason people are buying cars is because all they got are real old ones that are wearing out. And I said, yeah, but the point is they got the money to buy it. Mm-hmm. That's what we should be looking at, is that there's a million cars being sold every month, and that's pretty positive, I think.
And credit, like, we think this month will be a pretty decent month. It could be, you know, a 13 SAR, somewhere in that ballpark. We're seeing pretty steady retail demand, but it's certainly not anywhere near the 15 million. We don't see that in our crystal ball anytime
soon. No. Well, I...
What were you saying, 15 by 15? Is that what you were saying?
Is that what I was saying? Well, I keep saying that population growth is on the side of the United States. We add 3 million people net to the population every single year.
Now, if we can only get them jobs, that's one of the big problems.
Well, that is a problem. But, you know, we're adding something like 1 million licensed drivers. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they've all fled to the used car market, which is red hot with prices going up.
Right.
But you're right, Michelle. We need to get more jobs going. But I still believe that as the economy slowly recovers, and I believe it will, you bet. 15? We'll go to 16. In fact, if you project out to 2020, if the economy's good and jobs are in place, we could do 20 million just in the United States based on population growth. Because think about it. If we're adding 3 million a year from 2010 to 2020, we'll have added 30 million people.
And, we'll be back to call them out.
Yeah. Right? So forget the 15 and 15. I'll say 20 and 20.
Okay.
Hey, we ought to take our first break right now because we got to thank our sponsors who make this show possible. And Ben, let's give a shout out to our friends at Chevrolet.
Not only does the Chevrolet Cruze offer a ton of features, it features some of the best safety and maintenance in the business. The Cruze comes with rear park assist, which beeps if you're about to back into something. It has rollover mitigation, which means the car senses if it might roll over, and applies the brakes to the outside front tire to bring the car back under control. And it has OnStar vehicle diagnostics, which sends you emails about the latest status of your car. And you can learn a lot more about it at Chevrolet.com/cruise.
Hey, Peter, speaking of Chevrolet, you just got word that they're looking at reviewing their agency.
On a global basis, yeah.
Not in the U.S.,
not
right?
In the U.S. Joe Lewanek, I think this was inevitable. Realistically, they're about 4 or 5 years behind Ford in getting a handle on this global marketing thing. So, yeah, it was expected.
Mm-hmm.
Joe's determined to turn it around. So, and they're determined. Chevrolet is going to be our global brand, you know. So,
we saw hints of this last week at the Centennial when they showed ads from around the world.
Yeah, and I admitted I was invited and I didn't go because I saw the agenda and I thought, you guys are kidding yourselves. The media to pay attention that long, but they, you know. When they're immersed in their stuff, they think it's all good. And it's just like, I understand, you can't step out of it. And Jack will probably comment. But when you're immersed in this stuff on the manufacturer side, I mean, you are immersed. And so you think that, well, this really means a lot to us, and this is going to be important. We got to get this out. And that it's impossible to step out of your skin and, you know, go down the road and look at it from a distance and say, who gives a shit about that, you know? So I understand why they did it, but I took a leave. I didn't go.
What was interesting there, though, they showed all these ads from around the world, and they were sort of setting this up because they were saying the values across all the different countries are basically the same, and so there's no reason you can't do more global-type advertising.
But when where the manufacturers get in trouble is they throw out that global mantra, and they say, yes, we're going to have consistency, and blah, 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 And then the specialized regionalization where they don't capitalize on regionalization because they're so global that they miss opportunities in regional markets, and that's a fine line, and they're still learning that.
Flexibility.
Yeah, no, that very much is a fine line.
Mm-hmm. And I know
so many products, but especially.
And I know Ford's running up against that. I mean, it's great to be one Ford, great to be global, all, you know, buying raw materials and all that, but this marketing thing and the advertising thing, it's not nuts and bolts stuff. Mm-hmm. You have to be much more flexible.
One size does not fit all.
No, you have to be much more flexible.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you were referencing Jack. It's probably a good time to bring Jack on the set with us here.
Come on down.
Come on down, Jack. And, you know, this is very low-key. You got to put your own microphone on yourself.
Right.
Just clip it on. But we're being joined right now by Jack Hollis, who is the head of the Scion brand.
Sure.
And it's great to have you here on the set with us.
Thanks for having me. It's been hanging out in Detroit for the week. And
in from California.
Yeah, I leave the 80-degree weather to some rain and chilliness, but it's been a great week. It's been great to hang out here.
So what's going on with Scion these days? You know, when the brand launched a few years back, it was red hot, and then, as we used to say in my track team, it kissed bricks. It just came into a wall and hadn't been going much from there.
Well, I can tell you tons about Scion. For one second, the comment about marketing and how we all, as manufacturers, get into it. You know, it is interesting because it becomes really myopic quickly, and everybody, it doesn't matter who it is.
No, it doesn't.
You think you're the best, and you think your message really is making a huge difference. And in some cases, it does. But the word is flexibility, because things are changing way faster than our cars can change, our companies can change, and you know the whole movement with social media, and even you know a show like being here, is it's about being responsive, but it's really about can you, one, not take yourself so seriously, but have strategies that are flexible enough to move, whether it's globally or locally. And I think that's one of the things that I think is going to change a lot in this industry, whether it's 15 million or 20 million or whatever it might be. I really do think it has to do with who can be flexible. And again, don't get so serious that, you know, one move is going to change the viewpoint from 100 yards versus the viewpoint from 10 yards. And I do think that's critical. And I found it insightful to think that we all think that every single thing we do is going to change.
I've been on both sides of it. I understand. I mean, you get immersed in this stuff, and it's almost impossible to step away.
Yeah.
And I used to joke when I first started writing about extremists, I wanted General Motors to move all the upper executives to Austin, Texas for 2 months to go to a market that auto industry is like buried in the business section. Not on front page. Mm-hmm. Auto industry executive moves, doesn't even register, and spend time in an environment where people just don't care.
Yeah.
But, you know, then I decide, boy, why pollute Austin like that? That'd be a bad thing to do.
Austin, I like Austin.
I love Austin. I'm just saying. It's a bad idea. Speaking of, what happened to this car here?
Yeah.
We have a car
in the studio with us, the IQ.
It reminds me of the Ronnie Reagan movie where he wakes up without his legs and says, "Where's the rest of me?"
So you guys are giving me all kinds of fodder here. Where am I going to go? Because I'm going to answer both your questions at the same time.
Well, we're flexible here, Jack. See,
you know, this is a momentous auto line after hours. First time we've ever had a car.
We're in our new studio, and we're able to bring a car in the studio. So,
this is the easiest one you'll ever get in here.
This is
true. Well, we're honoring Michelle's first time on the show, my first time, and first time to drive through the doors here at the show. You know, the IQ is it's a really fun car, and really enjoy it. It obviously fits in here pretty easily. It's a 10-foot long. Vehicle. Oh, we like to show it as a picture sometimes, sitting right up underneath the basketball hoop. It's kind of a fun little picture. But it's been, it's a good car, and it's
roomy for two.
Roomy for three.
It's got a back seat.
Come on.
Okay.
He calls it a two plus.
It's a three. It's a three plus one.
Okay.
It actually sits four. But
they got to be real small people.
Yeah,
to be
if I'm
in
driving
the
car, you're not sitting behind me.
No.
You know, but actually, it is really for three. And it's kind of fun, some of the innovations in the car. And
well, you put an airbag in the back because for backseat passengers not hitting the back light of the car.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. You look at a car that's small, first thing he says, oh, well, tell me about the safety. And I'll tell you, we're excited. It has 11 standard airbags. And that's the most of any vehicle in the industry.
That's unreal.
Yeah.
11 airbags. And
I know, they're all over.
I think an interesting picture would be them all going off. Yeah.
I'm hoping never to see that picture.
I can imagine.
To blow the roof off the car.
However, we will.
And unless it's a controlled environment, right?
Yeah. Now, is this a loaded one, or are they all, what's it, 16, 17,000, or what are we talking about?
What would you pay for it, Peter? Oh, that may be a too loaded. Let me answer where. Yeah. You would pay $15,995.
Okay, cool.
And is that with destination?
With destination.
Okay,
with Scion Service Boost for your 2-year free maintenance and three years roadside assistance. That knocks your socks off.
Do you get an FRS with it?
Well, if you do, I'll put your name right on that list.
Okay.
But it's going to go right behind my name.
Yeah. Okay. No,
sorry.
That's cool.
And my son's name, too.
His son's name.
Yep.
The
money.
The, actually, the IQ, it goes for under $16,000. That's Wiz Destination, with the things I mentioned.
There are not many options on it, right?
No. It's, you know, Scion, we have really, we started from 8 years ago until today and continue to look at the model, but it is a mono-spec model. Bring in a well-equipped vehicle and then allow the people to personalize it from there. Give them a good blank canvas, play with it, decide what you want to do with it, and make it your own. And we still see that being very successful for Scion.
Now, does this still have a typical Scion color palette? Is it going to be a lot of available colors or just a few at launch? Or what?
Well, Michelle, you got to see the one unique color yesterday. That was our Hot Lava.
Yeah.
Or a couple days ago, you got to see it.
Yeah. Couple grays, I think.
Couple grays. Yeah, it'll be similar. This gives us more room to, you know, if I went back and said, what's Scion about? Scion's about trying new things for our company, experimenting, innovation. We'll have a similar color palette, but we will be broadening it, kind of like our lineup. You know, we're going from 3 models to 4 models. We'll be going to 5 models next year with FRS, looking at different colors for each of those models. And again, don't take yourself so seriously. Don't think you've answered it all. Be willing to be flexible. And that's really where I think the fun of Scion is to keep trying stuff for our company, and we'll do that with this car.
Now, go ahead, Jen.
Now, this is real small.
Yeah.
You know, the only other small ones out there right now are the Smart and the Fiat 500. Yeah. Next year, we'll see the Chevy Spark.
Yeah.
But what makes you guys think that a small car is really going to go? You know, Smart's been such a disaster, although I would argue it's the car that's the disaster, not that the fact that it's small. But what makes you think a small car like this will catch on in the U.S. market?
I probably won't argue with you on the analysis of Smart. However, what I would say is I think what's happening is because there is this huge movement throughout the United States of people. Now, I'm going to go both young and old, moving back into cities and city centers. And you see a lot of government money going into rebuilding of inner city. And I think the more they go into there, there's issues with parking, especially. There's just people overwhelming those places. You think of cities like, you know, Seattle and Boston, Manhattan, bigger cities, Detroit, Cleveland, Ohio, or Cleveland, Cincinnati, different cities. And I really believe that it will work because those places that have the most difficult time with parking, they need answers. You put two of these into one spot. You know, we're sharing a flat or whatever it might be, two people sharing it. And right now, you mentioned earlier, and I couldn't agree more, the issue is the jobs and unemployment. And what's happened a lot over the last couple of years for Scion is, you know, the consumer we're really targeting has been the most hurt in the industry. It's not 9% unemployment for people under the age of 30.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost 19%. And for my market, you know, where Scion's really been doing a good job, you know, in California and through the South and a lot of in Florida, it's closer to 22.5%. So when you look at that, you're taking a lot of people out. But as people are moving back into the cities, they're going to need new ideas about transportation. And I really think this car, Fiat, Chevy, they're all answers to that same problem.
You mentioned the other day about trying some car sharing ideas.
Yeah.
You know, we all know Zipcar and that kind of thing. What are your thoughts about a car sharing for this car?
I think the idea of a Zipcar car sharing is outstanding. It gives people, especially those who are younger and still in their kind of early stages of career, not sure where they're going to live, not sure what they want to drive,
can't
not sure
credit.
If they can't get credit. There's a lot of those issues going on. So this, it's a clever way to answer that. And to be able to try a car. And so clearly, a car like that would be great in the cities, Scion IQ. We've spoken to different companies, talked to them about what can be done. It's a good chance to drive those cars real world. Do you really like it or do you not? And the proof of it then is in the car. And whether whoever wants to go into that space, I think you'll see most manufacturers go into that space in one way or the other, whether it's their own business entrepreneurship mm-hmm. as an OEM or Zipcar or other companies. I think you'll find a lot of companies who get into that for that reason. I think it's a great car for it. I think we will go that direction for sure and keep the car out there.
You also were asked about, would it ever be electric?
Yeah, it will be. I think that you've heard previously our president, Jim Lentz, has mentioned we will launch an EVIQ sometime in 2012. But right now, the extra details on that, we still don't have all of them. But I think we're going to look at it as a way for us to experiment a little bit. Scion continues to be that for our company. And I think, electric is a way to look at different things, and I think we'll see that. But I think we'll probably, we've never gone down the fleet road. Scion has not played in fleet at all, of any corporate fleet or private fleets or company fleets. I think we'll do some experimenting and get kind of a little more fleet focused with an EV. See where that takes us.
Sure, that makes a whole lot more sense mm-hmm. this early on in the whole EV market.
What engine is in this thing?
It is new for Scion, new for our company in the U.S. It's a 1.3-liter VVTi engine. It's a CVT engine, so 1.3-liter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, I want to get into the FRS too, but let's take another quick break right here because we got to thank our sponsors of the show. And Ben, let's give a shout out to Hyundai.
With gas prices where they are these days, if you're after fuel efficiency, you need to check out the Hyundai Sonata. There's three different models to choose from. The 2.4-liter GDI, which delivers a segment-leading 35 miles per gallon. Then there's the 2-liter turbo, which offers 274 horsepower, yet delivers 33 miles per gallon, and the brand new hybrid that provides a combined 37 miles per gallon. And you can learn a lot more about each one at HyundaiSonata.com.
So, yeah, we're all interested in the fact that Toyota and Subaru have gotten together and collaborating on a car, and you guys are going to get one called the FRS.
Yeah.
So what can you tell us about this thing? It's been shown at a number of auto shows already.
Nothing. Nothing.
You
said that earlier.
You can tell you
a short answer to one of them.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be the... because Honda's, their brains have blown up. It's the spiritual successor in this market to the S2000, mm-hmm. which is one of my favorite mm-hmm. complete cars, just... True driver's car. So yeah. I'm very optimistic that the FRS will be that car.
Yeah, the FRS is that. It is very much in that flavor. It's more about... not being a muscle car or some strength car. It's really about a driver's car. And we talked earlier a little bit about manual transmissions and how as a percentage of people in the industry today, it is so reduced. But to get in this car with a manual transmission and just play with a car is so much fun. And the ability to drive this hard into curves and to really be a driving dynamic car is what it's going to be, and we're really excited about it.
And also, it's got far more aggressive styling than anything that we've seen from Scion.
Come on.
No, it's true.
Everything's stylish in Scion, man.
Well, I said more aggressive styling.
It is. It's been a fun, again, in a kind of innovative, experimental side, and that's what Scion needs to continue to be, so it is. It's a lot more aggressive. We've had a chance to spend a lot of time with the chief engineer most recently. I think what's interesting is the word you mentioned, though, about the Toyota collaborating with Subaru. You see Akio Toyota, and he's involved with a lot of collaboration, right? He's out there meeting people and doing things and pushing our company forward, being a little bit more flexible and pushing that forward. I think that bodes well for not only Scion, Toyota, Lexus, Global, all of that marketing combined. And so for me, it's exciting to see what's kind of gone from the Scion side, because we're getting the benefit of literally one of the coolest cars that will be in the industry next year.
And we're talking next summer, right?
Next summer.
Is there going to be a Subaru version of this car in the U.S. market?
Yeah, there's a Subaru version that'll be coming over. It's named as the BRZ.
Right.
And I don't know what that stands for, but I think it's called the BRZ. It'll come out sometime next year as well.
And are you guys going to use the Subaru engine, the boxer engine?
Yeah, one of the things that is going on, there's not a lot of details out yet, and because you're collaborating, you can't, there's a there's agreements and what you can and can't do, I guess. Not really down to my to what we can or can't say yet. But, basically the car has been developed by Scion or by Toyota. But we did utilize their Boxer engine.
Mm-hmm.
And we think that it was a great collaboration to use that. And there's so many benefits to that, you know, really bringing the vehicle back down the center of gravity, you know, the lower center of gravity.
Yeah, the key is balance, overall balance. It's going to be...
It's a front to, you know, the weight ratio, the power to weight ratio, and what that's going to be. I'm telling you, I've had a chance to drive it multiple times now. I can't say enough good about it. And we'll be excited for you guys to get in and try it out.
From a business point of view, sharing the cost of development, and, mm-hmm. and it, clearly it'll be small volume.
It'll be the right volume.
Of course it will.
Okay, so you'll get the IQ next year, you'll get the FRS next year.
Yeah.
Anything else coming along that we should know?
You know, I think at Detroit Auto Show, when we come back to Detroit, we'll have to maybe talk a little bit more then. Nothing specific yet, though. No specific plan for any future car. I think what we've done is last year we had a chance to talk a little bit about, you know, the TC. We launched that car, and that really helped that really helped the brand and really brought a lot of people back into the showrooms. And until the tsunami the earthquake happened, all of our models were increasing pretty significantly early this year. And then obviously as inventories got affected, that made it really tough. But to have those three cars are really strong again, and TC, you know, bringing in the youngest buyer in the industry, I love that, and staying really young, then bringing out an IQ a year later, an FRS the following year, going to five models, you know, I think is a good place for us to cruise at for a little while. But we are working on a couple of new products, and we'll have to talk more about that in the future.
I didn't know that. TC is the youngest buying age in the business?
Youngest median age buyers of any vehicle.
How old is that?
28 years old.
That's the single
youngest in the industry, and it's been that ever since it launched in 2004.
Hmm.
So we're excited because that's what, you know, Scion's about, bringing people in, especially those who wouldn't maybe necessarily consider Toyota. Bringing them in, and then, you know, and it's not so good if we just keep them, I mean, or just, you know, just sell them one car, so it's about keeping them. And we're still up over 50% of those people who are, and let's think about it, Generation Y tends to be the least loyal. So when we're keeping over 50% of them, we are more than proud.
How do you keep your prices down? I mean, these cars are made in Japan, and man, with the yen,
right?
It's got to be a real battle.
It is. And in the foreign exchange and how the yen affects our whole company, you know, that's a challenge that we're working on all the time. How we keep them down, we continue to, I know I'm sitting in Detroit, but the best engineers in the world, I feel like for our company, I'm proud to be a part of that company, and they continue to find ways to pull cost out of the vehicle and still producing great designs and great new innovative packaging and products. So I think it's a lot of hard work.
When is this in market?
This will start, actually...
The IQ we're talking about.
Yeah, IQ. Yeah. The IQ we're going to start in the West Coast, and it'll come out here in December.
Okay.
It's exactly the way we launched the brand, when we started on the West Coast and then kind of moved down to the southern United States, over to the East Coast and Midwest. And so we will have launched all of them nationally by March, end of March.
Okay.
So it'll kind of a wave rollout, and really excited to get it into the market. See what the consumer has to say about it.
Sure, everybody loves, that's in the car business, always wants new product in the showrooms. That's what makes this business keep on spinning around.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things you mentioned, your first question of the day to me was, you know, about where was Scion the last couple of years. Well, when you go through 3 years of having no new product, you're going to have, you know, but look at every manufacturer. You look at every manufacturer, it doesn't matter how big or small. You take some time off of some new products, you're going to have to pay the price. And it's good to get those new products back here. Enjoy the marketing, have some fun.
So when Scion was launched, the whole idea was like, well, young people are not aspiring to own Toyotas because their parents own Toyotas, and kids don't aspire to buy the kinds of cars their parents did.
Mm.
How's Scion working out in that regard, bringing in new buyers, and can you kick them into the Toyota or even the Lexus brand at some point?
Yeah, you know, the motto as it started was really... I mean, it was great, and today, same thing. Right now, 70% of all the buyers over 8 years, okay, so I mean, since we started, we've been in business now for 8 years, over 70% of them are brand new to the family. They've never purchased a Toyota, they've never purchased a Scion, they've never purchased a Lexus before. So we will take that all day long. But if it stopped there, that, again, like I said before, that wouldn't be enough. We're getting over 50% of them to stay in. Matter of fact, a person who buys a TC, now remember, that's the youngest buyer in the industry, 28 years old, 8 of the 10 cars that they trade into are either Toyotas or Scions or Lexus. So I think keeping that interest in the youth, because the youth right now, they're not buying a lot of cars, period, as a percentage of what they used to buy. You talk about the concern, Peter, about the 15 million. I think we will get there. I think we'll get close to that 20 million. But it's going to have to be the whole industry being able to think and act with the younger generation, because you're talking about 3 million each year. The younger people.
Right.
What are they buying? They're not buying cars right now. Some of them are buying used, but what are they really buying? These.
Phones. Yeah, smartphones.
Yeah,
right.
Whatever. And their social life, it turns that way. So we, as an industry, it's really, in my opinion, I love being a part of Scion, because I think our whole focus on that is you've got to get people excited about cars again, not just, you know, industry stuff.
That's what all the manufacturers are trying to figure out right now. How do we get kids pumped up about cars?
How do they connect safely?
But I also figure the first manufacturer that comes up with a phone that you can drive. You know,
maybe we can go in business together.
Yeah, that'll be
That'll be it. But that's why we're excited about a car like an FR.
iPhone, IQ. I see where you're going with the name. Yeah.
A lot of good things with I. You know.
Hey, let's get into the rapid fire section of the show, where we get into everybody's questions and from the audience. But we got to give a shout out to our great sponsor, Bridgestone. And Ben, let's bring that up.
Look at this. Bridgestone's using natural rubber, researching ways to enhance its quality and performance, and making their factories more environmentally friendly, producing products that save on fuel and emissions, and some that can be reused again, and promoting eco-friendly and safety driving campaigns. One team, one planet. Bridgestone.
Okay, it's time for rapid fire, and Ben, let's bring up that segment of the show.
I actually have a question for
Peter.
Goat Rope in Florida, who's a regular Auto Extremist reader, says the redesigned XB came out about the same time as the Nissan Cube and the Kia Soul. The XB seemed to win all of the comparisons put together by the enthusiast magazines, but the Kia Soul is outselling the XB by over 6-1 on a year-to-date basis. I don't know if that's accurate. And the sales per individual dealership, you don't even want to know those numbers. The Soul is just mopping up. The question is why? Hamsters? Well, I will say this as an ex-ad guy, that the hamster commercial is, whatever iteration you've seen, the many they've done have just been hugely successful and mesmerizing. Mm-hmm. And yes, that has a lot to do with it, I believe.
Yeah. No, like you said earlier about being flexible and actually and being creative, hey, give them credit where credit's due.
Yeah.
Ads are good and ads are fun, and that's what I love about the industry. When people keep pushing each other to think differently, that newest one of the hamsters are it's fun with the music, you know, and they tie into, you know, kind of a local thing. I think that this, you know, they did come out about the same time. There's a lot of differences. We don't take all that time on one answer, but I would say is that when you look at it, it's interesting that Scion and XB was the first box people saw the value in. That they saw some interest and they copied it. Scion is going to continue to try to be a brand that brings something to market new. We look at an IQ. Yes, Smart was there, but it's the same thing as we did with XB. XB Element was actually there before XB, but XB actually solidified that deal and brought coolness to it. Smart might have been in this mini car segment. We think IQ is going to build it out and make it something, you know, that, you know, and continue to grow it. So I'm kind of excited about where, you know, the competition comes in. It's great to have Kia and Cube, and I think there'll be others who will come in. One thing I will say, though, what Kia has done by going the way they have with their marketing, they've actually attracted a much older crowd than does the XB.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. If you go back and look at the different numbers, they have sold a lot more, but they also, at the same time, they've had to heavily incentivize that car. And at Scion, we don't. We don't utilize incentives. So we put the value in the car and put it there. We can argue all day about the volume or this and that, but the metrics to Scion are still about who we're bringing in and bringing in younger buyers. And we still have a 40-year-old buyer buying that XP as a median age, which is significantly less than Kia Soul or the Cube. And I think that that's different. Besides the fact that we sell about 60% to the male buyer, and they're selling about 60% to the female buyer. So there's a lot of differences.
What would be wrong with that?
It's wonderful. It's wonderful. I'm just saying the Kia has gone one way, we've got another, and Cuba's got another. But it's good for competition to see people copying Scion.
Yeah. What do you got, John? You've got some...
Yeah, Brian wrote in to say, the Fisker Karma got its official EPA numbers yesterday that are below what Henrik Fisker has been promising. With those facts and a little over 2 months left in the year, he still insists they'll move 10,000 units.
Wow.
What is Henrik smoking?
Well, he's not smoking. He's drinking Gaia with Sergio Marchionne, who insists that Alfa's going to sell 85,000 Alfas here in 2014 when we won't even see the first Alfa here until the late fourth quarter of 2013. I don't know about Fisker.
Fourth
quarter of
13.
13.
I mean, I don't know about Fisker. I was the one that called him P.T. Barnum first, I believe, and I still don't get it. I mean, the guy is just totally immersed in his own little world, I guess.
Well, I keep saying, if you're going to break into the auto industry, you better bring something new to the party. Mm-hmm. So you go back years ago, Toyota came in with what? A whole new way of manufacturing cars. Mm-hmm. And if you look at other automakers that have been successful, they've done something different.
Yeah.
All Henrik's doing is restyling existing vehicles, putting in a hybrid drivetrain, and I don't see where that's anything new. That's why I don't think it's going to survive. I think he's getting, 56 miles per gallon equivalent, 36-mile driving range. But when the batteries are used up, you're going to get 20 miles to the gallon. And
You look at hybrid sales, they're still all alternative fuel vehicles, total 2% of the market.
Right.
And then you talk about the stratospheres of pricing.
Right. And the luxury hybrids selling even far, far lower rate than
exactly.
that. And I still believe the only reason that Fisker got $500 million of taxpayer money from the U.S. government as Al Gore is on the board of directors. And, it really ticks me off when if you've got connections, you can get a lot of money. And if you don't have those connections, even if you got a better mousetrap, forget about it. There, I'll get off my soapbox. And Mitch W. wants to know about the hip height of the IQ.
The hip height.
Well, I'm thinking he's probably talking about the H point.
Yeah, the
seat.
H point.
By numeric, I don't know the actual numeric on the hip point. I will say this: the ingress egress. You guys drove it. Did you drive it as well?
No, I did not.
You had to drive it.
It's easy to get in and out of. You don't feel like you're sitting on the floor.
You don't, and you do sit up slightly higher above the road where you can, it's clear visibility on it. But I don't. Sorry,
how
I don't
much
have
bigger it. Length is it than the Smart?
I think it's 14 inches exactly, but I might be off by one, but I think it's 14 inches as a little longer car.
Okay, George from Brooklyn wants to know, should the Japanese automakers be concerned about Kia?
Let me answer that.
Yeah. I'd say yes, you should.
Of course they are.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a competitive business, and they're...
And it's global. I mean, Hyundai, Kia, both are on a worldwide tear right now.
But my I always like to come back, I guess, on that question and say, why would the Asian manufacturers be concerned about Kia versus the whole industry?
Oh, I think the whole industry.
Has to take notice. But here's why it's good. Kia, Hyundai, when the stronger you see manufacturers come in, we all push each other to be better.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a concern? Well, sure, if a person comes in and is doing something good, you kind of want to. But I just think it makes everybody get a little bit better. And I don't care if it's Ford making Toyota better or Toyota making Chrysler better or Chrysler making VW better. From the company, I don't feel concerned. I actually kind of like to see added competition that is quality. And I think that's what they're bringing. They're probably bringing that in. But, there's a lot of advantages they're taking advantage of right now and some foreign exchange and things like that. They got a lot of winds blowing behind their back right now. And that'll also change.
Yeah, it will. Hey, we got a bunch of phone calls coming in. Ben, let's bring in the first one of them.
Hey, John. It's Jonathan out in Old Penn, New Jersey.
All right, Jonathan.
Just finished listening to your latest podcast. Great show, Peter, John, Roast Jack. I'm hanging out here before the sun rises, detailing my vet, which I use all winter, and sipping on some cool coffee, Roast Jack coffee. It sounds awesome. Just want to say it was a great show, and I wish you the best in your new location. Have a nice day.
Thanks, John.
Well, yeah, thanks, Jonathan.
Nice.
Let's bring in another phone call, Ben.
Hey, guys. It's Nathan Keeley from Zanesville, Ohio, where it's quite the zoo here. I've got a question for your guest. A while back, Toyota debuted a concept called the ABAT. It was a unibody pickup truck, and there is speculation it could be matched with Scion. Is there any chance we did it in production, or is that concept just completely shelved?
What was the last part of it? I heard the ABAT part.
Yeah.
Production for Scion?
Yeah. The ABAT, what a great concept vehicle it was.
Pickup truck. But aggressive-looking pickup.
It was aggressive at the time. The concept had a hybrid engine as part of it, and it was a really great concept.
And the size was cool, too. The
size was perfect, wasn't it? So I'm not playing all my cards here, but what I'm excited about is I think that there is room for that in the industry. I think I look at it from a Scion side, probably a car-based truck, not so much truck for, you know, hauling a bunch of stuff and towing a bunch of stuff, but like I like to call it like a parcel carrier, something light, or, you know, light equipment, sports equipment. I think there's a market for there. I would love to see Scion move into that. I think that there is, I continue to work on that and kind of share my excitement, my optimism for a vehicle like that. We'll see where it goes, but it's definitely something that we are considering, and I appreciate the caller's knowledge of the ABAT, because I think that gives us a lot of ideas of direction. Nothing's set in stone, but it's something that we are definitely
looking at.
Yeah. I'm glad he brought that up, too. Tim wants to know, does Scion plan on adding any alternative energy powertrain vehicles to the model line, which is a great segue with what we were just talking about?
Yeah, totally. ABAT. You know, we talk about the hybrid and alternative fuels. Best part about being, or one of the greatest parts about being with Scion, is we're part of a great family at Toyota. And Toyota's done such a great job with Prius. And as the Prius family is growing, with the Prius V, the Prius C, the plug-in, Prius, all that, you know, Scion wants to fit in a space where we're not competing directly with our own company. So to answer the question directly, is no, we do not have any plans right now to add hybrid, you know, technology and alternative fuel vehicles to the Scion lineup. Because we really see that Toyota, it's almost a, you know, brand amongst itself, the Prius brand.
Right.
And I think we'll continue to support them on that side. But
we mentioned earlier, an EV here.
We will experiment and put our little toe into the water on that side, and we'll see what that one goes.
Smart move.
Okay, let's see here. Just had another one up. Mitch W. wants to know, on the Scion FRS, what's the philosophy behind the FRS? He says, I've heard driver aids will be limited in this car.
Driver aids?
Well, I think he's thinking about, like, traction control, ABS, stability control. That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Well, ABS will be there, but yeah. I think what he means is they're going to be, like, nanny mechanisms to keep you from having fun.
No. Well, I will say this. Mitch is insightful on the FRS. It will be a driver's car. So if Mitch is a driver, I promise him that if he wants to get in there, he will be very, very surprised. But the philosophy, I think, was the question. Mm-hmm. Philosophy was really based upon, you know, kind of the Toyota heritage of rear-wheel drive vehicles. And it's really based more closely related to the AE86 Corolla. That's where the 86 came from. The concept was FT86. The AE86 Corolla was not about brute power or anything, but it was really about balance. It was about the maneuverability of that car, the braking of the car, the playfulness of the car. So like that, we'll carry that over.
So, yeah, I love hearing about that philosophy, because that's my preference, is a really well-balanced car. I'd trade off power for a well-balanced car.
I think you and people who understand cars and who want it, and that's who this car will appeal to, and it will answer their hopes.
Mm-hmm. Ben, we've got another phoner. Let's bring it in.
Hi, John. This is awesome. I have a comment question for your guest. The Toyota IQ in September only sold 7 in Sweden, 30 in Spain, 152 in Germany, 39 in Greece, and 104 in France. In the first 6 months, in all of Europe, he only sold a little over 6,000. Seeing how it has already been a huge failure in Europe,
You know, city cars are very popular. What makes you think that would be a good idea for the U.S. where city cars aren't that popular from the start? Thank you. Bye.
Yeah. So he's saying it's not selling very well in other markets already, IQ.
It actually, so he mentioned all of the European cities and the markets there. In Japan, he didn't mention Japan, where it does sell very well. And I think that in the U.S., where it's different is, in Europe, you're having a lot of small cars, a lot of competition, and as in some cases, Toyota and that vehicle coming in late to the game in comparison to others. We're talking about in Scion IQ and this vehicle being new to the party, being a starter in the party. And I really also see there's a movement at the same time of youth and people moving back into cities that's not like that. I mean, it's established in Europe, and there's established names and brands and cars. And coming into that late, I think that was what hurt them there. Here, I think it's a little different. And I think that the marketplace is a little more open to something that's new. And the cities are as they're growing, are having more needs. I think we'll answer those needs.
And you aren't looking at enormous volume for this car.
No. Matter of fact, we talked about it a little bit yesterday or a couple of days ago. You know, our plan, Scion rarely has any, we don't really put sales targets, but somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 a month. So it's not as astronomical numbers either. But we see that somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000, once we're up to normal speed, we think that's a...
That should be very achievable, I would say.
Yeah. Well, but that's the nice part about it. We'll start from there. Consumers tell us more. Shoot, let's go. Right. We're on board for as many as you want to, you know, if you want to ask for, we'll make them.
Okay, Goggles Pisano wants to know, would you consider using the Scion FRS for the Long Beach Grand Prix in the future? And I think what he's getting at is the celebrity pro race thing that takes place there.
Peter, would you use it in the...
Well, I hope you guys actually run it in some of the other road racing classes too.
Yeah, we will.
It's a natural for the.
It's a natural for Long Beach. It's a natural, and I think what you'll see is a natural in the Drift Series. Yeah. You know, Scion and the Drift Series has really grown. We've had some fantastic drivers who've been a part of the Scion family for many years now, and I think bringing this car out gives them another entry and another play toy in racing. So we look forward to that.
Yeah, Ben's got it up on the screen there now, the FRS. And
yeah, that was at that's a shot from New York, the auto show when we launched it here in last, I guess it was May?
April, probably.
April or May. I guess April. And it was a lot of fun bringing that car out to New York. And then,
but yeah, that car looks like it belongs on the track.
Yeah, yeah. And we also, wait till you see the production car. It'll be just...
So it's not diluted too much, right?
Nope.
Okay,
we got another question that goes back to your comment, I think, about the low buying age. DC Auto Geek says, recently I conducted an unofficial poll with Veloster buyers, Hyundai Veloster, on a forum, and the average age was 36.8. So he goes on to ask, has Scion seen a change plus or minus in the age consideration demographics? You know, have you seen your average buying age change, I think, is what he's asking.
From a total brand standpoint, and by model, we really haven't. If you're talking about over the last 8 years, the original XA, when Scion came out with, had a median age buyer of around 42. And the current XD has a buyer age of right around 42. I mean, it's months. XB, the original one was, and people don't realize this, the first XB, how old do you think the median age buyer was?
Of the original XB?
The original XB, the smaller, is boxy. What do you think the median
age? I'd say like 32, 33.
32.
Well, I'm an owner of one, so.
Oh!
You skewed my answer.
Exactly.
I like it. That's okay.
Peter, what do you think? My son drives it, so, you know.
In the 40s.
In the 40s. The median age of the original XB was 39. And so the new one now is 40. So it's been very, very similar. Now, the TC is what drives the age of the brand, and so it was 27, and now it's 28. So even though we've gone bigger in the, or stronger vehicle in the TC and added a little more expensive, it's still only got 1 year older. So we have not seen a change for the Scion buyer from an age demographic standpoint.
Good.
Do you have a bright orange available on the TC right now?
We do not have a bright orange.
What was out in front of a
yellow.
Toyota? Yes.
Bright yellow. So that's what I wanted to bring up. There's Kia and hamsters. I need all of you and anybody who's watching to go on and look at Scion. To go to Google, type in Scion Zeus.
Oh,
that's all I'm going to say.
Scion Zeus. Do you know what this is about, Michelle?
Yeah. It is the most phenomenal campaign, and we decided to put it all online. Now, there's one commercial that's we have a broadcast, but it's really about a character Zeus, who helped us to invent the TC release series, and it's the yellow, the color of the pink. Mm-hmm. The color is high voltage. And it plays together great. And you got it. You have to. Oh, yeah, right here. The God of Awesome. It's so much fun. But you know, Peter, I still appreciated the comment you made earlier about the marketers and how we all are looking at it. And this gives, you know, we've gone.
I just drove by a dealer and I saw one sitting out front. So yeah, okay, that's it.
And it's the fastest turning. We have a release series car,
right?
For every single model, every single year, and of all of them we've ever created, this is the fastest turning one we've ever had. Hmm. It's also allowed us to play in some new marketing areas. So again, not take ourselves so seriously. Go into some new things. Go into some places, some humor, have some fun, and that's what we're getting, and it's great.
Check it out. I learned about color back in college. You know, German auto industry did a study. I don't think most people realize this, but in the 60s. And in that study, they found out that white, day-glow yellow, and day-glow green were the most visible colors because they did this for the Autobahn in the fog. Mm. That's why our fire trucks started to change, because this was a very influential study. But my personal study was I had a used 911 and I had a day-glow yellow Opel, and I never got a ticket in the 911, and I got a whole raft. And finally this cop said, let me give you some advice. If you're going to drive a car that's day-glow yellow, you got to cool it. So now I've been driving black cars forever.
I'm losing my microphone.
Oh, don't want you to lose your mic.
Sorry.
Hey, we got a couple more phone calls. Ben, let's bring in the next one.
Hey, guys. This is Chef W from Albany, New York. My question for Peter this week is in regards to his column this week. Is Sergio's apparent obsession with launching the Alfa brand in the United States detrimental to the reestablishment of the Dodge brand and the Chrysler brand is first-tier brand in the U.S. market? And you know, also deep down, do you really think Sergio really gives a crap about the Chrysler brand or the Dodge brand in the first place? Thanks.
Oh, I think Sergio definitely does, because he needs those
bread
to...
Bread and butter.
Yeah, that's the bread and butter. That's propping up Fiat right now, as John and I... John's brought up. And yeah, he cares. But that's bread and butter, blocking and tackling. But, you know, he seems to be obsessed with Alfa. And, you know, I love the Alfa name. I love the old Alfas. The new Alfas do nothing for me. I mean, yeah, they're sort of cool. But what it takes to launch a brand in this market is staggering. Mm-hmm. Now, I put between $200 and $300 million in my column, and that's just minimum to launch a brand. I mean, to do a proper campaign, you're talking $100 million. Okay, that's with an existing nameplate. Like a new Malibu, you got to spend $100 million, and Chevy found that out. Gee, we spent $100 million. It actually works. Now, when I was still at Campbell Ewald, they were going to launch a new Impala, and they said, oh, we're going to spend $85 million on this launch. We're going to do this. By the time they launched the car, they spent like $21 million on it. Guess what? It didn't sell. Gee, how does that happen? But so to launch Alfa, I mean, who remembers Alfa? I'm sorry, but it's a certain age group.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so you're starting from scratch. Now, Sergio sees, well, that's an advantage, because then, well, yeah, it's an advantage, but then you're really going to have to shell out the cash. And guess what? Sergio doesn't like to shell out the cash. Mm-hmm. He wants everything on the cheap. He wants to, we'll get another M&M spot for Alfa. We'll be good. It's not going to work that way. So, you know, I don't know. I wish those guys the best, but Sergio needs to sell Chryslers and focus on that, because I think this Alfa thing is about 80% pipe dream and about 15% espresso.
Well, and they've stubbed their toe already on Fiat, and the dealers have put up this money to put it.
Oh,
but,
yeah,
know,
it's just
like, and then that's been fits and starts, and Alfa's been fits and starts. There's a trust issue, you know.
Yeah, Sergio says.
Reluctant to put out.
Yeah, Sergio says we're going to sell 6,600 to 7,500 every month.
You know,
they're right at 3,000. Then he says we're going to sell 85,000 Alphas in 2014. Really? Because the first Alfa probably won't even show up until December of 2013. How does that work?
You know, not only does it got to spend the money, but it still comes down to who's selling those cars. It's the dealers. And the dealers and the dealer body and the relationship with that manufacturer and how you work on things as a team is so critical. And it's harder than ever today to break into that with different, you know, different dealers. So, but to find the best, that's still the secret sauce, is the dealers. I mean, that's exactly where those relationships have got to be built. And that's still the hard part. For anybody breaking
in. Well, between now and the Alpha, the ghost of Alpha, there's going to be a CUV, right, based on the 500, some sort of little crossover. Mm-hmm. But when are we going to see that? Mm-hmm. 2012? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. End of 2012, maybe. But so if I'm a Fiat dealer and I went to the mountaintop with Sergio and Sergio brought the tablets down and said, you spend $1 million to $2 million with me, I guarantee you, you're going to be swimming in dough by 2013, 14. And they're looking at their watches and wow, that's a lot of 500s I got to be selling, and that's not going to pay my light bill. So.
And I'm sure not going to just take the next jump to Alfa Romeo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, Jeremy Jones in Dallas wants to know, Jack, if Scion plans to bring out new technology like Toyota's Entune.
Yeah. Matter of fact, we won't use the Entune system. I think, again, Scion's...
You need a different DNA, brand name, right?
Yeah. And different systems. Scion is about, again, experimenting, innovating. So we're working on that. And that's, again, things like Detroit Auto Show, New York Auto Show. Jeremy, stay with us. We will be able to talk to you a little bit more about that. But that is critical to where we're going for younger consumers.
George from Brooklyn wants to know, where do you see Scion in the next 10 to 15 years?
Yeah. I see Scion driving you to that $20 million by
2020. All right.
That's what I see.
20 and 20.
I see Scion staying very consistent with youth, continuously changing with the youth market, and continuously trying new things for our company. Listen, the best part about this for Scion is we're within the Toyota family. Toyota's going to be here forever. How do we continue to find new things for the Toyota brand globally? How do we do it? Let's keep trying things. Well, Scion gives us a chance to try things with youth. Let's do that. And I think we'll be in the same place 10, 15 years from now, is continuously trying new things. And I'm confident that it'll continue to grow.
Ben, I think we got another phone call. Come in. Let's bring that in.
Hey, John. This is San Diego. Hey, on the Scion, is Scion planning on ever offering something like a Fiat Panda in the U.S.? And on Chevy, will they ever learn how to market a Malibu? I mean, they're hopeless against the Fusion and the Sonatas and the Camry. Forget about it. Any thoughts? Thanks.
On the Fiat, which car?
The Fiat Panda, which is
this, you know,
very low-priced car.
Yeah.
I think, you know, this is low price. Pretty soon, you know, 15 grand is going to be, that's going to be it, 16 grand. That's going to be it.
Yeah, but I think what he's getting, you know, isn't the base Versa like 10 grand? And I think,
I don't think
like
10 grand anymore.
No. Okay, 11 grand.
Probably.
And that's with nothing.
Nothing. They're not selling them at that.
No, they're not. But and then what's the other cheap one? Isn't the Kia Rio very low price too? So
no, I don't think Scion will go into that. I think the Scion IQ is where we will be from a lower end, an entry level point. I think you see a lot of manufacturers though finding, you know, that sub 20 are still trying to find sub 20 cars, but just the federal regulations and a lot of the safety standards and the different rules. Or bright, you know, taking the prices up, you can't have sub $10,000.
And in your case, currency situation.
And currency situation as well. So you put them all together. I think the IQ would be the answer for Scion.
And as far as marketing Malibu, we'll see what they do with the new car.
Right.
When the new car comes out.
Because they've really been putting their efforts on the Chevy Cruze. Malibu sort of lost the marketing momentum.
Well, it's funny. You know, GM has, you know, jettisoned all those divisions. And they said, well we're going to focus on these divisions. And guess what? They're still focused, you know, they put all their money on Cruze, and Cruze does really well, and then, oh, wait a minute, we got to launch Malibu here pretty quick. So they're still trying to figure that out.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we've got one more phone call there. Ben, let's bring it in.
Hello, my name's Harold Rogers, and I'm calling from Laney, British Columbia. My question is, why don't we see some activity on GTL, gas to liquid? Thanks very much.
That's a good question. you know, there's a lot of work being done with what they call autogas, which is liquid propane. In fact, Jack Roush is heavily into liquid propane. Yeah. And in Korea, I mean, the whole Korea, South Korea is big time into that, too. I don't know. I don't know enough about it to comment competently.
I don't either. I would say this. I think everyone's looking for a way, though, to not have to rely upon oils and gases. I mean, how can we find alternative types of fuels that work? I think every manufacturer is working on that to find the next aha. But I don't know enough on the gas to liquid side to see where that's going.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't either.
I like that whole, you know, that Cascada thing.
Yeah.
Turning trash into fuel.
Yeah. Where's that?
Yeah, where's that?
Well, you know, it's, yeah, in fact, I even saw an article today that we're going to start importing Brazilian ethanol because we just can't keep up with our alternative fuel mandate. So, but you're right, Peter, you know, whether it's sugarcane or corn, no, the best thing is if we can make it out of garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah, kill two birds with one stone. Mm-hmm.
Right. Out of waste.
I've always said, if America can make fuel out of garbage, we will be number one.
That is true.
And if we add in some trashy Hollywood movies, all the better, too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Jack, before we wrap up, who's your pick in the series?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, let's back up a minute and explain that. Jack,
that's what I was getting at.
Right.
Yes.
You used to play professional baseball.
Yeah.
Now, who'd you play with again?
Cincinnati Reds.
Cincinnati Reds. Okay. Yeah. And now we're
still pulling for them to win it. No.
what'd you used to pitch?
Center field. Love the game. Baseball's a great game. And
how long were you involved in that?
All my life. Went to college at Stanford. Had a chance to be a part of a national championship team there, which is one of the best memories of just, you know, playing for that tension and stuff. Had 2 years in the Cincinnati Reds organization.
But back up. How about the garden spots when you're in the minors?
Oh, man. I've lived all over this country in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and Billings, Montana, and Plant City, Florida. And I know you don't know where that one's
not
at.
Sure, don't
know. And Charleston, West Virginia. And, oh, man.
Was that Charleston or Charlestown?
Yeah, Charleston.
Okay, because there's a Charlestown, West Virginia, right near where Summit Point is. But
Charleston, West Virginia, is the home of the Wheelers, which is right next to Wheeling, West Virginia.
Cedar Rapids is not bad.
Cedar Rapids is great. Yeah. Matter of fact, you know what? It was a great career. I got to play. I got to enjoy it. And what it was teach me how to compete. And I love competing. Getting injured, you get an injury. I had to end up hanging up my spikes. I watch it. I coach it. I have four kids, and I have two young boys. Both of them getting to coach them. And some of the best is just teaching baseball to young people and seeing their passion for baseball. That really is a passion of mine, and getting to do that. So I'm always watching the games with the kids. And I don't care if it's high school or college or pro, and watching the World Series is some of the best fun. No, I got to go with the Cardinals. I got to go with the National League team. I was a National League guy. I like the tradition. I like the old school. Give me the Cardinals. And you got to love Pujols. And I love it. It's a great sport. Yeah. Great game.
That's so cool. It's great having you on the show here. Oh. You know, thanks for having joined us with our Autoliner After Hours.
Yeah,
you too. And thanks. I love this industry. We got a great industry. It's just going to get better. And it's fun to be a part of this. So thanks for letting me be a part of it and just have some fun with you guys.
Cool. You too, Michelle. Great having you on here. I didn't realize you had not been on the show before, only because, you know, you're on the other show frequently enough.
Yes.
And Peter, great as always, man.
Thanks, John.
Let's do it again next week.
We will.
Oh, I should also mention, don't forget to friend us on Facebook at facebook.com/AutolineDetroit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Autoline. Check out autoextremist.com or follow Peter at twitter.com/autoextremist. Michelle, what?
Autoobserver.com.
Autoobserver.com.
The business of the business.
And what, Jack? Scion.
Scion.com.
Yeah.
Of course.
That's great. Hey, don't forget to check out our new video player on our website at autoline.tv. And check in tomorrow night for a roundabout where Bob Hall, Jim Hall's brother, is going to be on, or Spare Parts Bob, as I call him. But anyway, folks, thanks so much for having tuned in tonight.
Visit our website, AutolineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily automotive news fix with AutoLine Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine Detroit. That's all there and much more at AutolineDetroit.tv.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.